Good morning, everybody. Buenos días a todas y todos. Titanyamni Al Sutra. The ninth meeting of the 10th session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers and friends, ladies and gentlemen. The forum will begin its consideration of item 6, comprehensive dialogue with United Nations agencies and funds. The forum will begin by having an in-depth comprehensive dialogue with the United Nations Children Funds. I would like to acknowledge that we have a large delegation from the United Nations Children Fund. The head of the delegation is Mr. Richard Morgan, Director, Policy and Practice. From country and regional level, we have Marianne Flack, representative in Congo, Brazzaville. Jeremiah Hopkins, deputy representative in Central African Republic. Brigitte Stark-Merkleim, Chief Communication Section, UNICEF Central African Republic. Esther Ruiz, Excluded Population Specialist, Regional Office for Latin America and the Caribbean, based in Panama. Miguel Hilario, Excluded Population Specialist from the Regional Office for Latin America and the Caribbean, also based in Panama. Adán Pari, Education Officer from UNICEF Bolivia. From the headquarters, Rina Hill, Associate Director, Gender Rights and Civic Engagement Section. Daniel Seymour, Chief Gender and Rights Unit. Beatrice Duncan, Human Rights Specialist. And Ravi Karkara, Participation Specialist. So we really thank UNICEF for coming to this, participating in this in-depth dialogue. I now invite Mr. Richard Morgan from UNICEF to make some remarks on the report submitted by UNICEF as contained in document EC19-2011-7. You have the floor, Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, distinguished delegates. Madam Chairperson, members of the Permanent Forum, representatives of permanent missions, Indigenous peoples' organizations, UN agencies, partner organizations, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. UNICEF is thankful to the Permanent Forum for this opportunity to engage with you in a comprehensive dialogue on measures that can be mutually undertaken to improve the rights of Indigenous children. Let me congratulate new forum members and yourself in particular, Madam Chairperson, on your election and for the very dynamic note on which you have begun your work. We would like to recall the fruitful partnership and collaboration that UNICEF has had with the previous fora and to recognize the immense contributions of this organization to the lives of Indigenous peoples in so many areas. Furthermore, we recognize the work and the complementary roles of the Special Rapporteur on the situation and human rights and fundamental freedoms of Indigenous peoples, as well as that of the expert mechanism on Indigenous peoples. Madam Chairperson, the UN Summit on the Millennium Development Goals held last September here in New York demonstrated that the numerous challenges facing us in our pursuit of the goals are actually much more complicated than we had realized. In accelerating progress, we also need to address disturbing new evidence of widening gaps between poor children and children from wealthy families, even in those countries that are making rapid progress towards the MDGs. These gaps are often widening. The Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean, ECLAC, indicates that child mortality is a full 70% higher among indigenous children than non-indigenous children. The life expectancy of a native Aboriginal child born in Australia today is some 20 years shorter than that of a non-indigenous child. And in Guatemala, for example, more than 53% of indigenous young people between the ages of 15 and 19 have not completed primary education, compared to around 32% of non-indigenous youth. These are just a few illustrations of the gaps that remain even as the world makes progress towards the Millennium Development Goals. More generally, around the world, we all know that indigenous children are less likely than other children to be in school and are more likely when they are in school to drop out of school. Indigenous girls are at even greater risk of being excluded from school, while indigenous children with disabilities face special challenges for their rights. These data all illustrate that indigenous children often face a lifetime of discrimination and exclusion, deepening their disadvantages and perpetuating the cycle of poverty from one generation to another. For UNICEF, these realizations have deepened our commitment to an equity-focused agenda, which helps us to understand and address both the immediate manifestations of inequality and the root causes of discrimination and marginalization, so that children, particularly those who suffer the worst deprivations in society, including many indigenous children, have access to basic education, to health care, sanitation, clean water, protection, and the other services necessary for their survival, growth, and development. UNICEF's field presence and cooperation in over 150 countries and territories offers us an opportunity for deeper engagement with indigenous communities and organizations, and we would like to take this forward with your help. Our organizational medium-term strategic plan clearly recognizes that in some countries, the children of indigenous populations tend to be disproportionately deprived of services. UNICEF's cooperation therefore seeks to benefit these children as a matter of priority. Our strategic plan asks us to go beyond support to specific programs and projects, important though those are, to tackling the root causes of discrimination and exclusion through advocacy, through program cooperation, through the use of data and evidence and research, and particularly to focus in working with governments on the strengthening of relevant public policies in ways that will benefit the rights of indigenous children. While our work and our engagement on this issue has varied a lot from one region to the next, our main interventions continue to be in the promotion of multicultural and bilingual education, culturally appropriate health services, as well as areas such as birth registration and the fight against violence, exploitation, and abuse. Through a stocktaking of our work on indigenous issues that we undertook in 2009, we recognize that we can do better, including in terms of building on our body of experience acquired through four decades of work, particularly in Latin America and the Caribbean. We can do better. We can take this further. We need to expand these experiences as well into other regions, including Africa and Asia, where we are active in some countries, but not in so many. And we also need to establish a more systematic and supporting structure within UNICEF as a whole for this work. Madam Chairperson, the Forum has made specific recommendations to UNICEF to take steps towards developing a strategic policy framework to guide our programming for Indigenous children. And we're happy to report that after consultations held in the last year or two with a diverse group of experts and organizations, including those with mandates covering Indigenous issues. We are developing a draft strategic policy framework, and we do propose to have further consultations on this, including with the Permanent Forum, during the course of this year. Concluding to say that we regard this comprehensive dialogue with you as a very opportune moment to share our current and planned work with you so that we can be better mutually informed on how to improve our work together for and with Indigenous children. We look forward to a very fruitful dialogue this morning. Thank you very much.
I thank Mr. Morgan for his statement. I now give the floor to Mr. Alvaro Pop, member of the Permanent Forum, to make some introductory remarks and pose questions to the UNICEF representatives.
Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Sisters and brothers, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank the representatives of UNICEF for accepting to participate in this panel with the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Questions and Issues. I would also like to say that the forum is grateful for the detailed and instructive report presented by UNICEF on its activities with Indigenous peoples. We also attach value to the sustained effort of maintaining the dialogue, interagency dialogue with consultative councils of Indigenous peoples in Latin America. The dialogue of the Permanent Forum with UN system agencies is of great importance because it allows us to have detailed information about the activities agencies are undertaking to the benefit of Indigenous peoples. It also enables us to see how much or how well the recommendations of the forum are being implemented. We appreciate the contributions of member states to UNICEF's work throughout the world, especially with regards to Indigenous peoples. Madam Chairperson, esteemed representatives, the situation of children in the world is of great concern, and the situation of Indigenous children is even worse. For whatever the reason, the adult society that makes the decisions abuses them, uses them, manipulates them, murders them, violates them, and tosses them aside. They are the natural victims of armed conflict, the environmental crisis, natural disasters, hunger, poverty, discrimination, exploitation, and domestic violence. The challenge of overcoming this situation is enormous for states and for all of us. Madam Chairperson, esteemed representatives, you know that there are more than 370 million Indigenous people all over the world. We do not have specific data about the number of Indigenous minors. At this stage of the world's history, globalization has shown Indigenous people that we are not alone, that we have similar cosmovisions and aspirations, but that we are different and that our world is far from other realities. In some countries, we are a minority. In others, we are a majority. In some regions, we have had thousands of years to recreate and make our cultures flourish, including our ancestral heritage. In many regions, we are still emerging from the ashes of colonization. But we are concerned about our girls and boys, the present and future of our peoples and our humanity. I remember the words of my sister Rigoberta Menchu. The situation of children is also a situation for society as a whole. It is the injustice of humanity that we live in. It is insensitivity, and it should be the shame of our world, the shame of our humanity, which has been unable to understand and give perspective to the most beautiful blossom of our life, which is the beginning of our life, our childhood. Those facts and figures bring us close to the crude reality and the pain of our children. 149 million children suffer from malnutrition. One child dies every 7 seconds in the world because of hunger. 11 million die through preventable causes. 100 million do not go to school because of poverty, discrimination, or lack of resources. 1.4 million children under the age of 15 have AIDS. 4.3 million have died of this illness, and 13 million are orphans because of it. 250 million children between the ages of 4 and 5 are made to work. 300,000 have fought actively in armed conflicts. 2 million died between 1990 and 2000 because of armed conflict. 6 million were injured or became invalids. 12 million lost their homes, and more than a million are war orphans. Because in compliance with our mandate and being the focal point for children and youth, I would like to bring to you the following questions and launch our dialogue. What sort of obstacles does UNICEF face in its work with Indigenous peoples? Are those obstacles similar in different regions of the world? What about the participation of Indigenous peoples organizations, authorities and communities, and young Indigenous peoples outside Latin America with UNICEF? Could you tell us about the progress and the policies you have with regards to young Indigenous people? And how is UNICEF's work different with Indigenous minorities and peoples in different regions of the world? Does UNICEF have a specific budget envelope for its mandate with Indigenous youth? And in what way does UNICEF tackle the problem of Indigenous child soldiers, both boys and girls? What importance does UNICEF grant to access to medicine and treatment for Indigenous children and youth suffering from HIV? What policy does UNICEF have regarding intercultural and bilingual education in communities that have an Indigenous majority? Does UNICEF have information on child pornography and the illegal trafficking of Indigenous children? How do you deal with this problem? How are you treating it? And finally, what differences do you apply in your work between Indigenous boys and girls? Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Alvaro Pop for his statement and questions. And I invite Mr. Morgan and other UNICEF representatives to respond to the questions raised.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. Thank you to Mr. Alvaro Pop for the several, I think we counted 12 or 11 questions. Madam Chairperson, if you agree, I would give an initial response. I would then hand over to my Associate Director, Rena Gill, and then to several of our colleagues who were introduced at the beginning to give more detailed responses. In general, let me say that UNICEF is strongly committed throughout the world to an equity-focused agenda. This will be based on our mission, which was approved by our executive board in 1996, which enjoins UNICEF to give priority to the most disadvantaged children in the most disadvantaged countries. We aim, with the leadership of our executive director, Mr. Anthony Lake, to intensify our focus on the most disadvantaged children in each country where we cooperate. As you know, we work through programs of cooperation with governments and agree with governments where the focus of our work should lie. This often includes working with non-governmental organizations and representative organizations at local level. So this would naturally include Indigenous peoples' representative organizations where they are present. I'll just make one other remark before handing over to my colleagues, which is that, as you probably know, among the UN agencies, UNICEF is one of the most decentralized. What that means is that most of our budgetary resources are, in fact, allocated directly to our staff and representatives at the country level. A very high proportion of our overall financing is directly allocated at country level. This means that our representatives, in their discussions with national and local counterparts, are essentially the decision makers in UNICEF. That is to answer the question about our budgetary system. We do not reserve particular sums of funding at global level, but we rather allocate them on a decentralized basis to our country programs of cooperation, where decisions are made country by country on how those resources should be focused. Our job at global level is to provide a clear and supportive policy environment for those decisions to be taken. And as I mentioned, and as colleagues are aware, we are currently working on a strategic policy framework for our work with indigenous peoples, which will support our representatives in their discussions on the allocation of resources in each country. So I would leave it there and hand over to Rena Gill, as well as other colleagues, with your permission.
Thank you, Richard. Madam Chair, essentially, as Mr. Morgan already said, we have kind of a two-pronged approach. One is related to the integration of issues related to indigenous peoples and children of indigenous origin within our medium-term strategic plan focus areas. The focus areas include young child survival and development, HIV/AIDS, education, child protection, and policy advocacy. And so there is an attempt to try to integrate these issues into each of the focus areas. The other is on special initiatives, and so far that has been stronger as the approach that UNICEF has been taking, and as Mr. Morgan mentioned, the strength of our work in this area does lie in the Latin American and Caribbean region. In terms of the work that the other questions that you asked, I will be deferring to my colleagues from the country offices and the regional offices. They have much more specific information. But just before I finish, let me just mention that we are looking at not just the issue of indigenous populations, but really the intersectionalities of exclusion. So it's not just looking at poverty separately, gender separately, and indigenous issues separately, but really looking at where these issues intersect and create a further and further exclusion and marginalization of children and adults from indigenous groups. Thank you very much. If I could ask Marianne, Bridget, and Esther to add to this this dialogue, please.
It's on? Sorry. So I'm actually working with Bridget in Central African Republic, and we wanted to look at the first question that you asked, which is what are the obstacles that one faces when working with indigenous peoples, and does this differ by region? And I think that's a very interesting question, because I think it really does differ by region. I'm going to talk just for a minute or so on the on the Central African perspective, which I believe is probably common to some parts of other parts of Africa, but not particularly or not as much the case for perhaps Latin America. And so Central African Republic is one of the poorest countries in the world. It has under 5 mortality rate of 1 in 5, 171 per 1,000. Enrollment in education is 50%. Life expectancy is 44 years old. That's for the general population. Now, to the extent that we're able to disaggregate data, we know that, for example, in the realm of education, 50% is the national average, 5% is the enrollment rate for indigenous children and the life expectancy rate is 5 years lower than the national level, and we have anecdotal evidence which shows that under five mortality is also much higher for indigenous people. So that, for me, is a principal obstacle to our work, in that we are facing a bit of a crisis on all child indicators in Central African Republic and probably other countries in the region, and yet, at the same time, we have an even more severe crisis in terms of indigenous children, and we have to try to work our mandates to support government largely. We have to try and work with government to help them prioritize within a already very difficult situation. That's one that I would say is quite, would probably differ from region to region, and then in probably not so different and more common to global experiences. I think we have a number of different obstacles to our work, legal being actually the least of the challenges. There are land issues, but in general, on paper, everyone has full rights. Then it's the application of that which is the big challenge. And so in Central African Republic, certainly it's social discrimination is the key, and that's social in the social milieu, but also with in relation to the authorities, the local authorities, who of course are not normally made up of indigenous peoples. The indigenous people in Central African Republic are just 1% of the population. So it, overcoming that social discrimination and then the political discrimination, the economic discrimination that stems from that is our big challenge. That's perspective from Central African Republic. Can I hand to Marianne?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Marianne from Congo Brazzaville. The description that Jeremy just gave for Central African Republic applies very much also to Congo Brazzaville, because it's the same Central African area. It's the same kind of indigenous populations which are across the borders in the north of Congo Brazzaville, bordering with the Central African Republic. I would like to reply to, first of all, to question number two. How is the participation of indigenous organizations, indigenous authorities, or indigenous communities and indigenous youth in UNICEF's projects carried out? In Congo Brazzaville, since a couple of years, we have assisted the government in setting up a network of indigenous organizations. And this network, in principle, covers all the organizations within the country that work with indigenous populations. It's existing since 2008. We still have some obstacles in helping them to work efficiently. But it's already a very good start, because through this network we can address all our programs, and we are trying to advocate also with all the other organizations that if they want to work with indigenous peoples, that they work through this network so that there is a coordination mechanism. This network is headed in the region by a regional organization of indigenous peoples. So the national organization is also receiving support from this regional organization in Central Africa. Indigenous youth are not specifically represented. They are in the network, but they are, for the moment, not yet very well established as a group within the organization, but we are trying to work with them on this. The network has prepared a 5-year action plan, and this action plan, again, would help all the other organizations willing to work with those populations to see how they can fit into all the work that is necessary to do with the communities. We also have annual work plans, and we have department work plans, so it goes back right to a lower level. Question number five, how do UNICEF's projects focus on indigenous children differ from its project director at children in general? I don't think there is a very big difference. Children are children, and there are children that are very disadvantaged, and we try to reach them, all of them, with our programs. However, when it comes to indigenous children, when we find out that there are specific problems, then we try to adapt our program to them. I can give a few examples. That is one example is in education. We know from experience that indigenous children very often drop out of school. And reasons are that they are, I give just a few reasons because there is no time, I think, to give all the reasons. But the major reasons are that very often they don't know the language well enough, so they can't succeed in school very well. And then there is this discrimination aspect, and Jeremy already talked about that, which is quite important in our region. Children are very often not able to resist this kind of discrimination and often drop out of school. What started in Cameroon a couple of years ago is a special school for reintegrating the children or to integrate the children into school. It's a 1 to 2 year education in the local language with local teachers and with a special curriculum. And currently we have this kind of schools. We call them ORA schools. In French, it's observer, réfléchir et agir. This kind of schools helps the children to integrate into the public school system. So it's not a separate school system. It's just a kind of reintegration into the public school system. This has been quite successful. We have currently 23 ORA schools in Congo. There are also a number of schools in the Central African Republic and in the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. There is a much larger number of this kind of schools. A next question that I would like to reflect a little bit is on the program for indigenous children living with HIV and AIDS. In Congo, we did in 2007 a CAP survey to find out about the knowledge, attitudes and practices concerning HIV and AIDS among indigenous populations. And this it was an extensive survey. It gives a lot of qualitative data mainly because it was very difficult to do quantitative survey. It's focused on qualitative. And we have used this survey to set up a specific program for HIV AIDS, and the differences with the activities with the Bantu population in Congo is that to be able to work with the indigenous populations, as they live very often within the forest in very, very small camps of sometimes even five, six houses, we have a team of medical staff, government staff, that goes into those camps once a month, and there is a nurse in the team, there is a doctor in the team, and there is somebody to take the voluntary test if the population accepts it. And there is also always a representative of an NGO with the team. Once a month they go into the camps, they organize discussions, they try to inform the population about the negative impact of HIV/AIDS and why it is important to be tested, why pregnant women should be tested, why it is important that when a pregnant woman is found seropositive that she can take treatment so that her child will not be infected. And what we found, in fact, is that there is quite a difference with the Bantu population in Congo in the sense that the indigenous populations are much more receptive to counseling advice, to they are open to discuss issues. They accept the percentage of people who accept the voluntary testing is higher. And we have related this, but this is it's not a kind of proof, but it's based on qualitative data and experience. What we find very often is that the traditional practices among the indigenous populations help very much in having this positive attitude, because I could just to mention a few. Amongst the indigenous populations in Congo, it's very much encouraged that young boys and girls, as from 13, have sexual intercourse. It's not prohibited, it's encouraged, and there are many practices like they go fishing together in the river in some remote areas, or they go hunting for small animals together into the forest and stay away for a few days. So this encourages the sexual context, but at the same time it also encourages an open attitude towards discussion about issues. So we have found amongst the work that we did that the population is open to accept the testing, and to when a woman is found seropositive and she is pregnant, she accepts also the treatment, and there is much less stigmatization than amongst the Bantu population. The last question that I wanted to refer to, but very briefly, is the work with between indigenous boys and girls. There, I can't say that we have a very different approach towards boys and girls, because also I think the basis for having this different approach is not yet maybe available within Congo-Brazzaville. We work with children. We are very lucky that we have good NGOs who have an open eye to gender issues, and if they find that certain girls do not succeed well in school, they try to help the girls. So I think I want to leave it like that.
Well, I first of all, I would like to thank the chairwoman of the forum and Mr. Alvaro Pop. It's a pleasure to be here with friends to share things with you. And we would like to thank our colleagues from the forum for their support to UNICEF. Regarding the obstacles and stumbling blocks, we know that there has been good legislative progress regarding indigenous peoples. Where the shortcomings are with implementation. That's the main issue. There are different kinds of obstacles depending on the country. Sometimes governments are not very open to the demands of indigenous peoples or even UNICEF. Sometimes indigenous organizations have put children as a subject in perhaps not the best area, and so there have been problems with that. Indigenous organizations should try and give specific importance to that. It has been an issue as well. We've had issues with statistics. We didn't have separate statistics. We need to try and do that. We need desegregated data for specific public policy making. We need to be able to say there are X number of indigenous girls, X number of indigenous boys. So that has been a bit of a shortcoming. And then some mea culpa. We know that in UNICEF itself, we are not always that well prepared or ready for working with indigenous issues and the intercultural focus in our work. We know that we still have things to do there. Another question about funds and budget. So far in Latin America, we've actually been quite fortunate. We have a regional program. It covers 17 countries in the region. We've had 5 years of the program, and there's 1 year left. The program was funded by the government of Spain through its Agency for International Cooperation, and that has enabled us to get a foothold in countries where UNICEF did not have a tradition of working with indigenous people, such as in Chile or Costa Rica, where there is quite a small percentage of the population is indigenous. And we have some sub-regional programs, the Bolivian program about intercultural education, which is also bilingual, in Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia. That was funded by the Finnish government. And as Richard Morgan said, we have funds, specific country funds for Peru, for example. There are funds from Canada for a comprehensive program of bilingual intercultural program. So for the time being, we aren't doing too badly, but I do think we need to make additional efforts for certain issues and some countries. For example, in the Caribbean, we need a bigger effort, and there is not as much money available for working with indigenous people in the Caribbean. Regarding your question on HIV medicine, we are working in different countries in different ways. We are trying to work a lot. We're trying to focus on prevention. In Brazil and in Peru, we are working with teenagers for peer-to-peer prevention. We think this is much more successful. We are also working on decentralization for the distribution of medicines. In Peru, the problem has often been how to get the drugs to communities and how to get the suppliers and the distributors to make it available to HIV sufferers in those regions. We work closely with the regional office and our colleagues in Latin America, but I think I should probably give the floor to answer more questions. Thank you.
I now invite members of the Permanent Forum and representatives of indigenous organizations to pose questions to the representatives of UNICEF. I give the floor to Edward John.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, and thank you to the representatives from UNICEF in this dialogue. And I want to thank my colleague, Alvaro Pop, for his very insightful and important background information with respect to indigenous children and youth. I believe that the relationship between the Permanent Forum and UNICEF is a constructive relationship, a good working relationship, and I see UNICEF as an important lifeline for many indigenous children in many countries. I have three questions. Empowering and supporting indigenous youth in advocacy in UN processes, in many ways to engage them, to make them part of the process, so that they're able to take on these issues and to speak, as they have done in this forum, in a very strong and effective way, and to encourage that, and how is UNICEF involved in that process? Question one. Two, UNICEF, as you explained, is working on an indigenous people's policy. The question I have in respect to that would be, and I understand that this is not a country policy, but an international policy, how are indigenous youth involved, and how are they involved in the development of this policy? I believe that it's important that their voice be heard. As the Secretary General said on day one, speak out. And I'm hoping that in processes like yours, UNICEF, that Indigenous youth are engaged in that. My last question, in the State of the World's Indigenous Peoples report on page 22, it speaks to the living conditions in Canada, USA, Australia, and New Zealand. It reads as follows, that poverty and well-being of Indigenous peoples is not an issue only in developing countries, as it is often thought. Even in developed countries, Indigenous peoples consistently lag behind non-Indigenous populations in terms of most important indicators of well-being. And in particular, examples in Canada, the significant number, a disproportionate number of children in care, state care, state custody are Indigenous children, whether they're in juvenile detention centers or in children who have been apprehended and put into foster care. Indigenous communities are looking to improve that situation. And the corollary to that would be an offset or an offshoot of a policy that's been historic both in Canada and the U.S. around boarding schools or Indian residential schools, where the policy was to kill the Indian in the child. As the Prime Minister in his apology said in 2008, the policy was one of assimilation. And we see that very strong today. And we heard the Secretary General at the outset say that every 2 weeks an Indigenous language dies. And as Indigenous peoples, we have attributed directly to these historic policies. Is UNICEF involved in any way in helping keep Indigenous languages alive? I know that sometimes it's a matter of policy and priority, that there's first things first to ensure that the physical survival of a child is respected and supported, but the cultural and linguistic survival of that child as well. So those are my questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Eva Biondet. You can make your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to thank my colleagues, and of course I want to thank UNICEF for the tremendous job you are doing in all the world for the world's children. And I'm very thankful that you are here today, that we can discuss issues that concern Indigenous children in particularly, but of course not only Indigenous children. Sometimes, of course, a little bit like my friend John said, that sometimes one thinks that there's the physical safety that comes first and other things come afterwards. But as we have learned in development, you cannot make a difference between social and economic development, democratic rights and human rights. They all go simultaneously. And in that sense, I think it's very important to discuss also the Indigenous part of child protection and children's rights being an inherent part of working with children, you know, also in the worst of conditions. And of course, in particular, when as Mr. Morgan said, the priority is on the most disadvantaged children, and unfortunately, too many of them are Indigenous. My question concerned perhaps first migration and the other one awareness raising. And of course, we all know and perhaps look with fear into the future that when migration will continue to grow, and of course, a lot of the migrating people in the world are also children. They are very small children even, but also adolescents that still are children. There, of course, these children, particularly when they come from difficult circumstances, are very at risk of becoming exploited, even in the worst forms of exploitation, in trafficking human beings, child labor, and so forth, sexual exploitation. Migration also affects, of course, also children, in particular also Indigenous children, in the fact that they are left behind when parents have migrated. And here, of course, both when children are victims of exploitation, but also when they are sort of victims of global migration in general, or not even global, just rural, to urban cities, there is great risk that children, the Indigenous part of the child, is forgotten. When restoring their rights, languages, culture, and others perhaps are not considered perhaps as first things. And I would like to ask, I know that you have done a report on Latin America and migration and Indigenous children, and perhaps from there could be something that you could elaborate further, bearing in mind these issues I have taken up. My other question actually is very, very concrete and perhaps easier. I do indeed know that these are very difficult questions, is about awareness raising. As has been said, discrimination is a very big part of why the root causes of why Indigenous children are in worst off situations. There, of course, it would be extremely important also to awareness raise about these children's situation to the rest of the world, to the adults and others, of course, also not Indigenous communities. And UNICEF has an annual report that actually is a fantastic, and I think it's used very much in schools and in education and in different circumstances among people. And I would like to ask you if you have considered that there could be some way of making more visible the indigenous, the work on indigenous children in migration or in other circumstances through perhaps this report. Thank you.
Thank you, Eva, for your questions. Simon Bibodulo, member of the Permanent Forum, you have the.
Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to welcome Mr. Morgan being at the podium and all the UNICEF team to ask your questions. I'd like to welcome the pertinence of what they said regarding UNICEF's work throughout the world. In particular, I would like to thank Mr. Alvaro Pop, who presented a lot of data and information and figures that really do explain to us the extent to which indigenous children, in particular across the world, are marginalised and vulnerable. That said, the figures that he put forward should draw our attention and that of UNICEF to the fact that despite everything that has been done, UNICEF still has a great deal to do. I am thinking about some of the evils that strike children in Africa and in Latin America. I'm thinking about orphan children in Angola, for example, and many children have no parents, and ones that have died of various different illnesses. And there are different illnesses. For example, in East Africa, there are children enrolled in armies, and there are also is also the phenomenon of women children trafficking, etc. So I'd like to put the question to Mr. Pop and Mr. Morgan. I'd like to ask, during this second decade of Indigenous people, can we expect a much more proactive policy in terms of defending children's rights, Indigenous children's rights? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. You can answer this first round of questions.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson, and thank you so much to members of the Permanent Forum. It's very helpful to us to get your questions. It helps to guide us. It helps us to focus more clearly on the issues that you consider to be priorities. So I just want to start by thanking you for all these questions and the ones to come, because they guide us for our future work as well as for the immediate dialogue. I will ask my colleague Ravi Karkara to respond to the first question from Mr. John on empowerment of indigenous young people in advocacy in the UN. And I will also ask Esther, if you could, to respond to the question on languages, protection of languages, and also migration, if you would. The policy framework, I would just say, second question raised by Mr. John, the policy framework is in the initial stages. We definitely take your guidance that it would be necessary to consult on this with young people from indigenous communities as we go forward, and perhaps we can get your more specific advice on how to do this. But we are, I think, totally committed to proceeding on a highly consultative basis, including with young people's organizations from indigenous communities. So this would be very helpful. In terms of your question on the role of UNICEF in, if I'm using the right term, industrialized countries, you gave some examples, including Canada, United States of America, and Australia. Traditionally, UNICEF's presence and role in industrialized countries has been one devoted primarily to fundraising for UNICEF's work in developing countries. We are looking at some degree of shift of emphasis, or perhaps, let us say, strengthening of the role of our national committees in a number of industrialized countries for advocacy, and particularly advocacy in relation to the most disadvantaged children and families in those countries. There are examples already. They may be, in some cases, small scale, but they do demonstrate at least the commitment and the intention of our associate organizations in industrialized countries to strengthen their advocacy work on behalf of the most disadvantaged children in their home countries. One example would be in Canada, our advocacy work is now moving into working with subnational authorities in the area of rights-respecting schools, which we think would be an area of particular relevance to children from Indigenous families and communities. In Canada as well, UNICEF issued a report in 2009 on the health of Aboriginal children, and there is a commitment from UNICEF Canada to move forward in its collaboration, both at the federal and, I think, state level or provincial level in Canada, to working for the rights of the most disadvantaged children, including Indigenous or Aboriginal children. Similarly, in Australia, there is a commitment. There are relatively small pilot operations supported by UNICEF to address the situation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples, and particularly children who are disadvantaged in Australia. So I think the general answer is that we hope to move towards a more proactive role in industrialized countries in terms of advocacy, supporting to pilot initiatives in partnership with local representative organizations and local authorities. I would also just mention that we have a research center that periodically publishes report cards on the situation of children in industrialized countries, and I happen to be visiting them later this week together with other colleagues, and I will certainly raise with them the possibility that we focus more of our research and analysis in relation to industrialized countries on the situation of Indigenous children and other highly disadvantaged groups. So that's very helpful. Just let me say, in response to the second question from Ms. Biode, if I pronounce it correctly, thank you very much for your suggestions on awareness raising and how UNICEF can use its role and its flagship publications and other communications. I think we do have the ability to do more and to do this more strongly through our regular communications. So I will certainly take this to my colleagues in relation to the State of the World's Children Report and how we can reflect Indigenous children more clearly and more strongly in the future. But also I would mention that there is a possibility to do more through our database publications. We have a publication series called Progress for Children, which draws on our databases. Now, here's the issue, if I can just take a moment to try to describe it. We believe that there are more possibilities for taking our existing databases and disaggregating them in such a way that would bring out the situation of Indigenous children more clearly and more extensively. For certainly 20, if not 30 countries, we have data both from previous household surveys that we've supported, as well as ones that are going on now, where if we had the resources, I mean, it really basically takes money and staff to do this, we could produce more data relevant to the situation of Indigenous children. But at the moment, we are in a difficult resource situation, particularly, as I described, at global level, because we are protecting our field operations. So it is really the possibility is there if we can find ways to support with more resources. If I may, Madam Chair, just hand over briefly to Ravi and Esther to address. Oh, I'm very sorry, actually. Let me just respond to Simon Vibudulu's question. Forgive me the pronunciation. I very much take your point that our approach needs to be more proactive. I think we are, if you like, we are coming awake on this issue more than we have in the past. And we very much note that the Convention on the Rights of the Child, which guides all our work, does contain extensive reference to the rights of Indigenous children. It does specify that Indigenous children need focus, need attention when we look at the rights of all children. And I think we're very much intending to be guided by that going forward, and as you say, take a more proactive approach on that issue. And I would hope that is true for the United Nations Development Group, of which we form a part, which has guidelines on Indigenous people for the work of the UN at country level, and UNICEF will certainly be a voice in the partnership with other UN agencies to try to, as you say, take a more proactive approach. With your permission, Madam Chair, to my two colleagues.
Madam Chair and fellow advocates of Indigenous people's rights, I think just to be very blunt in the beginning, I would like to say that it's a very big challenge when we're working on participation of children and young people from Indigenous backgrounds. Our strategy overall has been to really strengthen the existing work where it's taking place, really integrate the participation of children and young people from Indigenous backgrounds, and also to magnify some examples and emerging practices where participation of young people from Indigenous backgrounds is taking place. And I would elaborate my answer into five categories. One is to elaborate on policy advocacy work that we are doing here in New York, and second, to elaborate on some of the practices of policy advocacy in partnership with young people themselves. The third part of my answer will be about capacity development on strengthening participation of Indigenous young people. The fourth will be about the knowledge management on participation of young people from Indigenous backgrounds. And lastly, the most important, often neglected, is looking at monitoring and evaluation of participation of young people from Indigenous backgrounds. So in terms of the policy advocacy, I think one of the biggest successes UNICEF, along with our partners, was able to do was work with the CRC committee on the General Comment 12, which is to elaborate participation of young people. And as Richard was explaining, in this particular General Comment, we were able to really bring and spell out what governments and state parties can do to strengthen participation of Indigenous children, adolescent, and young people. I think even more important, the same year in 2009, the omnibus resolution in the General Assembly that year focused on participation of young people, and our strategy was to ensure that participation of Indigenous young people is integrated into that resolution. So the resolution looks after, elaborates the excluded groups, including the Indigenous young people. And as all of us are very much aware, the International Year of Youth, which is taking place right now from the 12th of August last year and through the 12th of August this year, last week, UNICEF, in its efforts to magnify the work on policy advocacy or participation of Indigenous youth, we jointly co-hosted a side panel, with the Youth Caucus here and the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues and other UN agencies to highlight examples and youth initiatives to forward the rights of Indigenous peoples. The second aspect of my work, which is very much about partnership, I think it's now the third year in a row that UNICEF has been successfully hosting site panels to magnify not only the voices of Indigenous young people, but also very much their initiative and their civic engagement in their communities, along with the Youth Caucus, and this year with the UN Permanent Forum. Prior to that, I think it's also important to highlight that, as I said, that one of our approaches is to integrate the participation of Indigenous issues. 2 weeks ago, we were hosting a global symposium on youth and migration, and one such panel was on youth migration. And we ensured that in that panel, which was about youth and migration, had an Indigenous young people's voice within that to share with the panelists the issues of internal displacement. So as I said, the focus is on integrating that. Last year, we were able to support an Indigenous young person from the Pataxó community from Brazil to actually address the General Assembly here to really bring the voices of young people. A 15-year-old young person actually addressed the General Assembly, and I'm sure most of you remember that from last year. Having said that, I think there are a lot of gaps when it comes to capacity development when it looking into participation of indigenous young people. But what we're doing in terms of the steps you're taking is UNICEF is in process of finalizing the General Common 12 Handbook on Participation for Governments. And in that, we have a special section dedicated on strengthening participation of indigenous young people. We're also in process of finalizing a handbook for parliamentarians. And again, I would be happy to say that we again dedicated a special example and a section on strengthening participation of indigenous young people for parliamentarians to really magnify what parliamentarians can do at a community, at a local level. Along with this, to see what we can do to strengthen the capacities of children and young people themselves, we are in process of finalizing the adolescent child-friendly versions of the UN DRIP so that young people are much and better aware of their rights which have been described in the UN DRIP. And I must say that we have also been partnering with the Youth Caucus, which has been a fantastic experience to see how their issues can be integrated not only here, but when they go back into the regional networks and the community networks. The other elaboration is about knowledge and research. When it comes to knowledge and research, as we know, there is, of course, a huge gap in the larger debate of children from indigenous groups. When it comes to specifically participation, we see that it's even a bigger gap. So we have just finalized, and we hope this will be available soon, is an annotated bibliography to bring examples, tools, methodologies, good practices on participation of indigenous young people. We're also in process, and which has been a challenge, and my colleague Nicola and I have been struggling, is a discussion paper to see that what goes in when we have to look at strengthening participation of indigenous young people. And finally, on using new media, we've been using the YouTube, for example, just to give you an example, there's a film on participation of young people from the Patasho community on ending sexual exploitation of young people with them. This has recently been uploaded in YouTube so that this can be used and be available for all the young people and many of you sitting here. And finally, on the work which UNICEF is doing on developing monitoring and evaluation framework on participation of young people, we again dedicate a specific focus to ensure that participation of indigenous young person and their monitoring and evaluation is integrated in that. Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you for the opportunity once again to answer questions. Regarding migration, we do have a study from Latin America. From last year, we did it with Flaxo, and it covers several migration processes. It's between Ecuador and Colombia, Bolivia and Argentina, and Guatemala to Mexico. We endeavored to study the situation of children, those left behind with other family members, very young children who travel with their parents, or teenagers who migrate alone. Their circumstances are different and the problems are different. UNICEF works to protect displaced migrant children in different countries. We are working with governments on bilateral or multilateral protocols on the treatment dispensed to these children when they are illegal immigrants. The study has, on the research, has been disseminated, and we have been able to monitor the work. In the case of people going from La Paz in Bolivia to Buenos Aires in Argentina, both our offices, our Bolivia office and our Argentina office, are working with the Bolivian consulate in Buenos Aires to work with the minors in Argentina who have migrated from Bolivia. And in La Paz, we are working with those children who have been left behind with family members, because there are often problems of dropping out of school, for example. And we've been able to monitor that, and that has been a very positive experience. Regarding increased awareness of indigenous issues at the Regional Office for Latin America and the Caribbean, we had a campaign called Diversity as Opportunity. The idea was to launch a message that indigenous children, white children, children of African descent all have something to offer, and trying to counter discrimination. We've analysed the way stories are portrayed in the news. There is discrimination because usually the fact that a child is Indigenous is only mentioned in the case of a crime. We've seen this in Chile and in Brazil. We're also working in Costa Rica, monitoring all this news and how it is portrayed. This has been, I think, very interesting. Regarding linguistic survival in Latin America, all the work we're doing on bilingual and intercultural education has been ongoing for many years. We have publications. There is a sociolinguistic atlas only in Spanish. We have a CD version here at the back of the room for you. It also talks of those languages which are at risk of becoming extinct. And I would now like to give the floor to my colleague, Alan Parr, who works with languages, who can give you some specific examples. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and all members of the forum for enabling me to take this opportunity to participate. I feel that I'm here as a Quechuan Indian from Bolivia, and I feel this is a great responsibility for me here today. Regarding your question, I'd like to say that through the implementation of bilingual intercultural education in Latin America, we felt we had to tackle linguistics and the study of indigenous languages for several reasons. The first one is important because they are instruments of communication. It is a way to convey knowledge and the cultural baggage from grandparents to parents to children. We have tried to re-establish indigenous languages in order to re-establish culture and communication. Secondly, through the implementation of bilingual intercultural education, we realized that we have done a lot of work, but we had some problems with language, because in order to pass on knowledge, we need the right instruments in order to guarantee learning in those languages. We have done some research of indigenous languages. We did linguistic research, sociolinguistic research. We recorded the alphabets so they could be used either for educational instruments and tools or to be used for teaching, because we need indigenous languages for vocabulary or lexicons, for sciences, for arts, for humanities. And we have had to do that for intercultural education. At the same time, it is important to realize that the study of indigenous languages is very useful. We cannot overlook or neglect the negative impact of the loss of a language, of its cultural heritage. It would not be fair just to let these languages become extinct. I, too, would like to refer to the sociolinguistic atlas that has been published in Spanish. It is useful, because it contains information on how many people, old people, young people, are speaking each of the languages, how many children require special teaching in order to be able to study in their own language. So this is really information on indigenous languages for cultural and communication purposes.
Scribe to speak on this item, and I will give them the floor later in the meeting. At this stage, I invite representatives of member states and indigenous organizations who wish to pose questions to UNICEF to raise their nameplates. So I will allow maybe 30 minutes more on the dialogue, and then we will listen to the different statements that are related with this same item. So I give the floor to Ms. Eva Rabie-Magli from Denmark.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Let me start by thanking Mr. Richard Morgan of UNICEF for the very informative presentation of the report on UNICEF's approach to promoting and protecting the rights of Indigenous children and women, and on UNICEF's various activities regarding Indigenous peoples' issues. As you're well aware, Denmark is not just a good friend of UNICEF, but also a supporter of the equity-based approach to refocus on the most marginalized groups. And we see a clear link from this to your work with and for Indigenous peoples. We have learned from the report and the presentation and discussion here today that UNICEF is currently working on an organizational framework for addressing Indigenous issues based on the Permanent Forum request from 2006. We support very much these efforts and expect to see the strong momentum of the equity approach and reaching the most marginalized translated into a soon-to-come comprehensive policy framework accompanied by guidelines for implementation. After reviewing the report, we have a few questions and input for the discussion here today. I realize that some of the issues have already been mentioned during this morning's debate, but nevertheless. Firstly, can you elaborate a bit more on the content and the gist of the framework, and how far along have you come with the preparation so far? Second, the framework will serve as a guide for country officers. Are you planning to have any performance incentives linked to the framework? And thirdly, the equity approach to programming focuses on addressing bottlenecks for accessing services, such as education, healthcare, sanitation, clean water, etc. Do you see specific bottlenecks relevant for UNICEF's work with Indigenous peoples? And how do you plan to address these? And lastly, Indigenous issues are often culturally and politically sensitive issues. How does UNICEF plan to engage with Indigenous peoples in the context where their perception of needs might be at odds with the country's broader vision for development? Thank you very much.
Thank you. I call on Wilton Littlechild from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to all delegations. We were prepared, actually, to address both health and or the ISAG report and this item in one intervention. However, we have a specific question we want to give to UNICEF. Perhaps a preamble or statement is in order, Madam Chair. The World Indigenous Nations Sports Inc. advises that the inaugural World Indigenous Nations Games, which were proposed for Winnipeg, Manitoba, in the summer of 2012, have been postponed. The Board of Wind Sports expresses its most serious appreciation for the ongoing support of the Government of Manitoba Through the leadership and vision of the Honorable Eric Robinson, Deputy Premier of Manitoba and Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, a partnership among the governments of Manitoba and Canada and Wynn Sports was proposed for the Wynn Games to be hosted by the City of Winnipeg. A critical element of this partnership was that the Government of Canada would match the financial contribution of the Government of Manitoba. Unfortunately, our concerted efforts to secure a decision to support the Wynn Games from the Government of Canada were unsuccessful. Ultimately, in discussion with the Government of Manitoba, we had to conclude that insufficient time remained to adequately organize and hold the Wynn Games in the summer of 2012. Therefore, we were compelled to accept the cancellation of the agreement with Manitoba. Wynn Sports has been considering how best to respond to this situation. Certainly, we and many supporters are deeply disappointed with the outcome. Last year at the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the president of Wynn Sports spoke about the importance to Indigenous children and youth of an event such as the Wynn Games. We called for Indigenous peoples around the world to organize and contact Wynn Sports if they wanted to participate in the Wynn Games. Hundreds of Indigenous peoples and numerous Olympic organizations from all regions of the world have done so. To them, we offer our sincere apologies for the need to cancel the Wynn Games in 2012 in Winnipeg. Our message to you today is that the dream of the Wynn Games remains a vision to be fulfilled. Adversity and struggle are facts of life for Indigenous peoples. This is but another one of those temporary obstacles. We are now formulating new plans and strategies to realize our goals. Building on the positive lessons we have learned, we will intensify our dialogue on holding the inaugural Wynn Games with the International Olympic Committee and other potential partners among interested states, international organizations, and private companies. In parallel efforts, we are examining how to strengthen the support for local Indigenous organizations, the development of coaches and training programs, and building a facility so that Indigenous children and youth may realize the benefits of organized sports. Most importantly, we give you our commitment to maintain the connections we have established. We thank you and the Permanent Forum for your continued interest and support, and look forward to announcing the future venue and the date of the Wynn Games. Finally, we ask UNICEF if they will now join us to ensure Indigenous children and youth enjoy fully the right to play in accordance with Article 31 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I give the floor to Anna Naikanchina, member of the Permanent Forum, to pose a question.
Thank you very much indeed, Madam Chair. Since this is the first time I'm taking the floor, I would like to congratulate you on your election to this important post, and I wish you all the very best until the end of the session. This is a very pertinent topic for Indigenous children in particular. Children are the future, and their future is in our hands. I would like to thank UNICEF for providing us with this information, and also our colleague Alvaro Pop, who gave us a lot of information on children. In Russia, there is a clear state policy for Indigenous peoples. However, the issues of Indigenous peoples nonetheless, and the problem of children in particular, are not sufficiently tackled. I would like to talk about some issues in the Russian Federation that Indigenous children people face, in particular in the Taiga region. The language issue is pertinent because the children of Indigenous peoples continue to have to study in boarding schools, and so they lose their traditional knowledge and languages and traditional values that are necessary to be maintained. The next point is that of Suitsud. In the Russian Federation, in Buryatia Republic, where I come from, there's a very large amount of deaf and mute children. And in there are 50% of people. This is a very high percentage. There are 50% out of every 1,000 people, rather. And so we need to understand what are the reasons for this. Then another problem is the problem of diabetes among indigenous children. Local children often suffer from type 2 diabetes. And so we see that the children particularly suffer from this in indigenous areas. This harms young people's health, obviously. And so there's a very high suicide level. And so it's very important to tackle this. These very high suicide rates, 50 out of every 1,000 people commit suicide in our indigenous regions. Many different people groups entrusted me from Russia to present their interests at this forum. And so our organization, which is of indigenous peoples, of small indigenous people groups in Siberia, and we had a congress of young indigenous people, and we adopted a declaration, and there was a recommendation there that was sent to local and central authorities in the Russian Federation. And we would very much like to work closely with UNICEF and with other bodies of the UN that deal with indigenous people issues. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Anna. Dea Delany from the Indigenous Peoples Organization of Australia. You can pose your questions to UNICEF.
Sorry, Madam Chair, I'm just getting my stuff organised here. Thank you. Given that Indigenous peoples from Australia have the poorest health outcomes on the planet, and within Australia itself, on every marker of disadvantage, Indigenous Australians rank the lowest. In particular, our infant mortality rates are 2 to 3 times higher. The incarceration rates of our youth is 20 times higher than that of other Australians. You mentioned some pilots. Can you please provide our delegation with further information regarding the pilots you are doing within Australia? And how does UNICEF engage with Indigenous Australians, I guess? What are the protocols and strategies that guide your work? And lastly, you know, we also have a number of peak organisations that we believe you should work in partnership with, and we recommend that you work through our elected community representative organisations to ensure a more collaborative, cooperative, coordinated and effective approach within Australia itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. I invite you to respond to the questions.
Once again, many thanks to those who have raised questions. Minimize the feedback noise here. Very helpful again to our work going forward. Firstly, to our distinguished representative from the permanent mission of Denmark. I will partly respond to this and also ask my colleague Dan Seymour to provide further details, particularly on the content or gist of the strategic policy framework and where we are exactly. Let me just say on one or two of the other questions that were raised. Firstly, normally when we issue a new policy in UNICEF, we develop some performance indicators or monitoring indicators that enable us to see the progress made. So this is something we did with our gender equality policy over the last 2 years. We have a new gender equality policy, and we will try to do the same with the policy under development for Indigenous peoples. The specific bottlenecks, I would say bottlenecks and barriers that face Indigenous people in accessing basic services such as education, health, and clean water, I think are, in my view, likely to be specific to the context of each country and each area within the country. There are common ones. There are ones relating to service delivery itself, which can be overcome through various techniques to analyze where the bottlenecks lie, whether it's lack of supplies, lack of outreach, or there can be what I call barriers on the other side, perhaps due to lack of information, lack of awareness about the availability and benefits of services, or, as we've heard already, in many cases, discrimination, which exists, which acts as a deterrent or, if you like, a barrier for people to access basic services. So I think as part of our equity focus and specifically for the strategy and policy that we want to develop, we would like to see how we can try to identify the particular bottlenecks facing service availability and the barriers facing the utilization of services among Indigenous populations. You also asked in the written statement whether there would be an advocacy strategy or an advocacy or communication activities, including on education, as part of this effort of ours. And I think that's a very good suggestion that we would certainly want to look at. Again, as we've said before, our financial situation is difficult at the moment for global efforts because we are protecting our field operations. But we'd be very glad to partner with any organization that would like to work with us in not only developing the strategy, but also, as you suggest, advocating and communicating more widely once we have it in place. Let me try just to respond briefly to one or two of the other questions, and then, if I may, Madam Chair, hand over to Dan Seymour. In terms of the right to play, right to leisure activities, this is something that UNICEF does support around the world, as it is part of the rights guaranteed under the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and we would certainly be interested to see how we can promote those rights to play for Indigenous children specifically. Can I thank the colleague from the Russian Federation, Anna Nekanchina, if I correctly pronounce, for the very helpful and detailed information which we will take note of and share with our colleagues. Our colleague from Australia, rather than, I think, trying to give you details since time is short, we do have a detailed document available on Indigenous advocacy issues and efforts undertaken by UNICEF Australia. So if you would allow, I would suggest that we make this available to you at the conclusion of the this morning's session. If I could request Dan Seymour to add a few words.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate, I think for those of us working on developing this new strategic framework, which we feel is very important and very significant development for the work of UNICEF on Indigenous peoples, the feedback that we're having, this discussion, and also what it's provoked within our organisation in terms of us getting together and talking and thinking better has been really very invaluable. So I really very much our appreciation to the Permanent Forum for this process. We currently have, I would call it, a sort of very early draft of the policy framework. It is, we're still working on that now. It contains both principles and practical guidance. The principles are derived not only from the Convention on the Rights of the Child and the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, but also, of course, the UNDRIP. And in addition, I should be clear, the as we explained in our report, the policy framework addresses both the rights of Indigenous children and their communities, but also of minority children. We do this because at a programmatic level, there are very often similarities between the work that we do with minority groups and the work that we do with Indigenous communities. However, we are also very clear, and the policy framework will articulate equally clearly, that there are very significant differences between the two groups, such as attachment to land, for example. So what we're trying to do is make sure that our framework allows different experiences in different countries to be complementary, but of course not make the mistake of thinking that complementarity is being the same, you know, and recognizing those differences and not being blind to them. In terms of the practical guidance, it includes guidance and articulates some of the issues in our different focus areas, in health and child survival, in basic education, in prevention and transmission of HIV/AIDS, in child protection, and also in policy advocacy, but also in specific areas, cross-cutting areas like participation, which you've heard about from my colleagues, or communication for development. As well as this issue that my colleague Rena Gill mentioned of the intersectionalities of how these issues affecting Indigenous children relate to Indigenous children who also have other challenges, whether it's around disability or whatever area. So that's just a sort of an overview of some of the issues that are covered within the draft. We will set up two groups, an internal working group. I hope it's apparent to the Permanent Forum's membership that we have work going on, particularly in Latin America, Caribbean, but also in other parts of the world. And we want to draw on that experience and expertise that we have within the UNICEF family to the fullest extent possible, including in industrialized countries. Richard mentioned some of that work there. But also an external group, of course, which is extremely important, from a broad spectrum of Indigenous peoples organizations, including the Permanent Forum. Specifically to the point that Mr. John raised earlier as well, of course, the Youth Caucus has been and remains a very close partner of UNICEF. We try to be a very good friend to them. We've learned a lot, for example, in the consultations that my friend Mr. Carker referred to in the development of the youth-friendly UN DRIP. And all of those experiences have already fed into what we're putting into the policy framework, and we'll continue to be drawing on that, so extremely important to us. We will be putting out the policy framework in a sort of a pilot form for a year to get feedback as it's actually used. So that will also be part of that consultation process. One thing I did want to make extremely clear, I think in the context, and our the permanent representative, sorry, the representative from the permanent mission of Denmark raised the connection to the equity focus, which I think is extremely important. But one of the things also that Mr. Lake made clear in his statement in the last for the last International Day of the World Indigenous Peoples is that for UNICEF, this is not only an issue around exclusion and marginalization. He made it very clear then that UNICEF understands the rights of Indigenous communities and Indigenous children as being pertinent to everybody, and that the religious, linguistic, cultural, traditional, and scientific wisdom, knowledge, and heritage of Indigenous peoples is an asset for everyone. So we don't see this only as something that UNICEF does for the sake of Indigenous peoples and their communities, but really something that is done for the benefit of humanity. So I'll leave it there. But thank you very much. Again, a lot of appreciation for all of these inputs. Thank you.
Thank you for your answer. I will now give the floor to Dalí Ángel Pérez from the Latin American Youth Caucus.
Distinguished members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the International Forum of Indigenous Women is taking this opportunity to recommend the following to UNICEF. One, include young Indigenous leaders from different regions at interagency meetings in order to guarantee a comprehensive debate of experiences and exchange of best practices regarding Indigenous children and young people. Two, promote mechanisms to support boys, girls, and young Indigenous migrants to maintain their cultural identity, considering the impact on their lives. Three, use statistics to monitor suicides among young Indigenous peoples and implement preventative strategies through public policy and full participation of young Indigenous people. Four, empower Indigenous peoples, especially women and young people, and increase capacity building with governments and UNICEF. Five, draft and publish research on Indigenous girls and boys from Africa and Asia. Six, pay special attention to violence against girls, boys, and young people, supporting dialogue to define culturally suitable preventative measures, especially for female genital mutilation. This is so important for girls. And we believe that we should all fight for the full exercise of the rights of young Indigenous people, as well as girls and boys. Thank you.
We are receiving our combining UNICEF with the interagency support group. I would now give the floor to Dr. Maria Ines da Silva Barbosa of the World Health Organization to present the report of the annual meeting of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Peoples Issues, as contained in document EC 19-2011-10. And we will continue listening to the statements, and we invite UNICEF representatives to remain with us until the end of the session, because there are the statements contain both things. Maria Ines, you have the floor.
Buenos dias.
Good morning to everyone. I would like to greet our ancestors, and I would also like to greet our chairwoman, Ms. Mirna Cunningham, the members of the Permanent Forum, Indigenous representatives, delegates, colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, young people, Ms. Chandra Roy Henriksen, and the secretariat team of the Permanent Forum. And I would also like to thank all those people who made a contribution and made it possible for us to be here, those people who are essential for our work, including here today. I'm referring to the people who worked through the night to get this room clean and ready for us. We are all dependent on one another. Those invisible people are also part of our work. I will now continue with my statement in English.
Or the health organization, as the current chair of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues, to address the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues at this 10th session, and to report on the last meeting of the Interagency Group, which was hosted by World Health Organization at its headquarters in Geneva, 16-17 September 2010. The Interagency Group was established to promote the mandate of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues within and across the United Nations system. Currently, it consists of over 30 members, mainly UN agencies, but also the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, the European Union, and many others. It meets annually, provide an opportunity to discuss ways and means to advance issues of concern to Indigenous people and reinforce collaboration. World Health Organization was tasked with organizing last year get together. All Interagency members were invited, and over 20 participated. The theme of the Interagency meeting was Indigenous People Health, through a number of World Health Assembly resolution, or the health organization is mandated to devote special attention to the promotion and protection of the rights of indigenous people to enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of health. Before I report the interagency meeting itself, let me take this opportunity on behalf of World Health Organization to thank the members of the interagency group as well as the chair and the secretariat of the UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues for their continued support. World Health Organization would also like to acknowledge the support provided by the outgoing chair, United Nations Environment Programme and UN Habitat, in help World Health Organization to organizing the meeting. Thanks to all your effort, I am able to report the interagency meeting was a success. In conjunction with the interagency meeting, moreover, World Health Organization hosts an official visit of UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues members, Mr. Carlos Mamani Condori, Mrs. Victoria Taulis Corpus, and Mrs. Liliana Mabella Muzank to World Health Organization. They meet with a range of World Health Organization departments dealing with different health challenges of interest and concern to indigenous population and explore ways of enhancing collaborating between the Permanent Forum and World Health Organization. World Health Organization would like to express gratitude to UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous People. I will and say the conclusion of this meeting. This meeting also includes a section of good practices in addressing indigenous people health. There is a need to harvest good practices in the area of indigenous health, and a panel was devoted to exploring the meaning of good practices in this context. Human rights need to underpin any action taken to improve the health of indigenous people. These include the right to self-determination and to practice cultural traditions and customs, as well as the right to participate in the decision-making process. Interagency member groups participants discussed the idea of developing a compilation of good practice examples, illustrating how UN agencies and other stakeholders in the field of health can and should work in cooperation with indigenous population to improve indigenous health globally. This could guide and inspire health policymakers and practitioners to strengthen their effort and to work in a way consistent with human rights. The report of the annual Interagency Support Group meeting is available on the UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues website. To conclude, World Health Organization is grateful for having been given the opportunity of organizing the Interagency Support Group meeting. World Health Organization looks forward to keeping up the momentum to this meeting generate for action on indigenous health and to continue working close with the Interagency Support Group, the UN Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues and its secretariat and indigenous community in all parts of the world. Thank you.
I thank Ms. Da Silva Barbosa for the statement, and I also want to take the opportunity to thank all of the members of the Interagency Support Group for their commitment to for the implementation of the recommendations of the Permanent Forum. And I would also like to congratulate UNFPA, who has agreed to take on the chairing of the Interagency Support Group until the next session, and invite them to, as they have proposed in the statement, to work closely with the members of the Permanent Forum. I now give the floor to Ms. Shirley McPherson from the Australian government delegation.
Madam Chair, Australia acknowledges the significant work of the United Nations Children Fund, UNICEF, in promoting and protecting the rights of Indigenous children and women, and recognises the efforts undertaken by other governments in partnership with UNICEF. We note, for example, the efforts undertaken in Argentina, Paraguay, Cambodia, and the Congo to improve educational outcomes for Indigenous children, including through respect and support for Indigenous culture and languages. As in a number of other countries, we in Australia recognise there are specific complexities to delivering high-quality education in remote areas. The Australian Government's Closing the Gap agenda identifies three clear and specific targets set in 2008 relating to Indigenous education in Australia. The first is to ensure access to early childhood preschool education for all Indigenous four-year-olds in remote communities by 2013. We have work underway to obtain improved data, but I am pleased to advise that on the basis of the available data, we believe this first target to be achievable. The target is supported by two national partnerships with state and territory governments, under which infrastructure and additional services are provided. These include 38 children and family centres, 16 of which are to be in remote areas, providing childcare, early learning and parental support to Indigenous families and funding to support universal access early childhood education services for all Australian children, under which there is a specific focus for actions and reporting on Indigenous children, particularly those in remote communities. The two additional longer-term educational targets are to halve the gap in reading, writing and numeracy for Indigenous children by 2018, and to halve the gap for Indigenous students in Year 12 or equivalent attainment rates by 2020. While there is a challenging job ahead of us, there are positive signs for both sets of targets. The Australian Government is committed to driving changes that provide good access to quality education for Indigenous peoples and is working to improve teacher quality and foster better outcomes for Indigenous students. It is taking steps to ensure Indigenous education is provided in ways that respect Indigenous culture. Madam Chair, participation in culturally inclusive, high-quality early childhood education programs and care can assist Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children to get the best start in life. These programs should build upon the rich cultural, linguistic and conceptual skills that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children bring to early childhood education. In 2009, the Australian Government announced its National Indigenous Languages Policy. This policy demonstrates the Government's commitment to keeping Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander languages alive and supporting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians to connect with their language and culture. In 2010-11, $0.4 million was allocated to support over 60 community-based language maintenance and revival projects, incorporating around 200 languages across Australia. My own organisation, the Indigenous Land Corporation, is contributing to improved educational outcomes through its support for the National Centre for Indigenous Excellence. This facility in inner Sydney, built and funded by the Indigenous Land Corporation, provides world-class facilities in sport, education and the arts for up to 5,000 young Indigenous people from around Australia each year. It symbolises a new era in Indigenous education, engagement and leadership. Through its four development pathways of sport, learning and innovation, culture and arts, and health and wellbeing, the National Centre of Indigenous Excellence is helping to close the gap in Indigenous disadvantage in reading, literacy and Year 12 attainment rates. Primary school children have access to a six-month accelerated literacy program at the centre's Intensive Literacy Tutorial Centre. The centre is also providing a new education and employment opportunities for local Indigenous youth, including jobs in sport, recreation, youth and community programs, and hospitality. Education is a key factor for improving wellbeing and success. Quality early childhood education is critical in setting foundations for learning. Literacy and numeracy skills are fundamental to educational achievement. Finishing school improves prospects for employment or further education. With sustained effort from all levels of government and from the community sector, we are hopeful about the future for Australia's Indigenous children. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Ms. Elizabeth Kaplanek from the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus have the floor.
Manahu Iboso, Manahu Inum, Manahu Tu Eho Nopata. Hello to my friends, hello to the Moto people, hello to the people from all over. My name is Elizabeth Kaplanek. My people are the North Fork Rancheria Moto Indians and the Omaha Nation. On behalf of the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the North American Indigenous Peoples Youth, and the Fourth World Center for the Study of Indigenous Law and Politics, we would like to express our respect and thanks to the esteemed members of the Permanent Forum for this occasion to address the topic of comprehensive dialogue with the United Nations Children's Fund. We believe strongly in the world, in the work of the United Nations and the work of UNICEF is greatly appreciated for the good that it does. The importance and significance of this work is the reason I stand before you today, because the majority of United Nations agency work and dialogue neglects the Indigenous peoples of North America. Due to the fact that our nations exist in the boundaries of this North America, we do not exist in a territory defined as a developing country, but are given the classification of a developed country. We note the Permanent Forum Report, State of the World's Indigenous Peoples states, even in developed countries, Indigenous peoples consistently lag behind the non-Indigenous population in terms of most indicators of well-being. This is an injustice we cannot and shall not allow to be continued. In a recent study related to the UNDP's Human Development Index to the Indigenous peoples of the developed countries of North America, Australia, and New Zealand, all areas displayed a significant HDI gap between the Indigenous and general populations. As of 2001, Australia is ranked third compared to Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, ranking of 103rd. The United States is ranked seventh. However, American Indians and Alaskan Natives are 30th. Canada is 8th, yet the Canadian Aboriginals are ranked 32nd, and New Zealand is ranked 20th, while the New Zealand Maori are 73rd. A prevailing English-speaking culture has usurped Indigenous peoples, resulting in massive loss of Indigenous resources. Shorter lifespans, higher unemployment rates, poor health care, and education are problems that compose a continuing way of life with wide-ranging negative impacts of poverty and despair for our Indigenous youth in the lands of developed countries. This is all a present-day result of the cultural destruction that was forced upon Indigenous peoples through the mechanisms of colonialism. The trauma from the colonialism of our peoples have not ceased to exist. Each generation has a new battle to fight, a new injury to bequeath to the next. Instead of implementing preventive measures, major physical and mental health concerns are becoming increasingly prevalent. Obesity, diabetes, tuberculosis, depression, suicide, smoking, and substance abuse rates are significantly higher among the Indigenous populations. Entire nations have lost their cultures, languages, and lives. Our ways of life are still threatened by extinction and theft from the profit of transnational corporations that view even the sacred aspects of life as commodities to be exploited. These are problems that will not be solved without direct confrontation and acknowledgement of the issues at hand, and have not been properly addressed to this day. We make the following recommendations to this 10th session of the Permanent Forum, not just for ourselves, the next generation, but for the next 7 generations. First, we recommend a North American caucus meeting with the special rapporteur given the particular history and current situation of the indigenous peoples of North America. Second, we call upon the Permanent Forum and all United Nations mechanisms and agencies to immediately reform their mandates, missions, and work statements to include within their programs all indigenous peoples globally, and to immediately assist dividing us or further defining us in terms of which colonial borders continue to be imposed upon us. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Ms. Gabriela Garduza Estrada from the Government of Mexico.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. At this comprehensive dialogue with UN agencies and funds,
Fondo de las Naciones Unidas,
especially with UNICEF, my delegation would like to share with you some of the actions undertaken by the government of Mexico for indigenous young people and children. The National Commission for the Development of Indigenous Peoples, CDI, is reducing the equality gap through the access of girls, boys, and young people with little opportunity to study because of lack of money. And this is in coordination with the Secretariat of Public Education is using specific shelters and homes for this. We facilitate the participation of bilingual young people and instructors who cooperate with the children and young people in these homes to build their culture. This has had a positive impact on their school results. The program Indigenous School Homes provides food, working with different institutions of the federal government to provide the basic food provisions such as milk with iron, vitamins, zinc, folic acid, as well as other foodstuffs, so that these children, these 61,000 children who are there, will not suffer from obesity. There are special workshops at these homes on human rights, health, nutrition, and the Millennium Development Goals. I would draw your attention to the fact that between 2007 and 2010, 93% of beneficiaries of these homes did complete their schooling, and 40% of them are women. The working plan of the Framework Agreement on Cooperation between the CDI and UNICEF. Last year, UNICEF delivered 2 mobile units for civil registration activities for far-flung communities. They have been working in Chiapas and in Yucatan states. This is providing opportunities to girls and boys in these communities. They are now registered and have birth certificates. Through the specific cooperation agreement between the CDI, UNDP, and UNICEF, we are promoting the reduction of disasters in the south and southeast of Mexico, and we are capacity building in gender equality, interculturality, and the rights of children in Indigenous communities. There are other government institutions that are also working on this. The state governments and municipal governments are involved too. I can't go into all of them individually because of lack of time, but they do exist. Thank you.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor to Laurie Johnston from the Southeast Indigenous People's Center. I give the floor to Julia Damiana Ramos Sánchez, Federación Nacional de Mujeres Campesinas Indígenas Originarias de Bolivia, Bartolina Sisa.
Gracias, señora
presidenta. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. And members of the forum and everyone else here, I would greetings as we share our problems, problems which do not just affect Bolivia, but the whole of the world, problems which affect children, the future of the world, and all institutions need to work on development and children. In Bolivia, we have been able to draw up policies with the government regarding education. In fact, recently, the political constitution of the state now includes a special law on education. We will be introducing education for all and for all future generations. We do have significant challenges, such as how to coordinate with UNICEF as the Confederation of Indigenous Women, working with UNICEF to speak of the comprehensive nature of family development. For us as women, we can talk of children, we can talk of girls and boys, their stability, their well-being, their health, their nutrition. We should also talk about access to natural resources. If we do not talk about this, we can then not guarantee that families will not have to migrate in pursuit of other opportunities, either within Bolivia itself or to other countries, to provide their children with better opportunities. We want to guarantee a better future so that our children do not have to live in the same way as us. So we are talking about our language, our customs, our identities. In Bolivia, we have worked on all challenges where we were forced in the past to forget our own languages. Now that we have a plurinational state, we now have the obligation to ensure that all state officials work to recover all our languages, and we have the right to speak our languages. As a woman and as a mother, I feel that I can be a walking school, an itinerant school, that my children can share my knowledge and my lessons to guarantee the well-being of children and young people. The participation of young women and young men will depend on government policies through the recommendations of the forum and work with institutions. All of that will depend on the work of the forum here. So, Madam Chair, I hope that we will work towards access to natural resources on behalf of Mother Earth, on behalf of families. This will mean a lot of work before 2014 and the World Summit, where we will have to decide what sort of future we want, what sort of planet we want, and how we as women, as parents, we can build a world that will guarantee stability for our children in all phases of their development. Thank you.
The floor to Barbara Shaw, member of the Mount Nancy Camp in Alice Springs, Australia.
Yeah, good morning. My question is to the to UNICEF. I live in a first world developed country, and a lot of our Indigenous peoples from Australia are impacted upon policies based on United Nations treaties. Now, the Northern Territory Emergency Response was based around the CROC as well as CEDAW to implement a law. So my question is that we've got punitive measures, there's organisations that are out there in Australia that's trying to close the 17-year life expectancy gap. We have unviable communities that want to go into economic and social development in maintaining our law and culture. We have a bilingual language policy where our children cannot speak language in the first 4 hours. So I want to know what UNICEF is doing around the context of families when it comes to Aboriginal people in Australia being family orientated and work with Aboriginal people affected by policies in trying to, save our children, because we have a lot of problems with children around prostitution, getting into drug and alcohol and walking around in the streets. And what we want UNICEF to do, I guess, is work with the grandmothers and grandfather, you know, the grandmother's law and the grandfather's law around building the capacity to maintain our culture within our communities, because Australia has a diverse language groups where we have many nations within a nation. So every Aboriginal language group is different. Every area, every community, town is very different. So I urge UNICEF to come out and talk to the grassroots people of Australia and actually find out what's actually happening, because there are good-willed Aboriginal people living in affected areas that do the right thing for their women and children. And we have representatives here from the Northern Territory who are affected by those legislations that the Australian government puts out. So to actually find out what's happening with the children and women in our communities, I suggest and urge UNICEF to come out and speak to us. Yeah.
Thank you for your question. And I give the floor to Marlene Pilar Ortiz Higuita, Organización Regional Indígena del Quindío Oriquín, Colombia.
Gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving us the floor. Thank you for giving us the floor, and we wish you every success as a Latin American woman as chair of the Permanent Forum for Indigenous Issues. The visit of the Special Rapporteur for Indigenous Peoples to Colombia in 2009 concluded that Indigenous people in our country are in a serious, critical, and worrisome situation. The mission of the Permanent Forum to Colombia was able to verify the difficult situation we are still experiencing because of the armed conflict that went on for decades. The violence generated by this conflict had a big impact on indigenous territories, which are rich in natural resources, hydroelectric, mining and forest resources. The situation of violence left behind the horrors of war, such as murders, forced disappearances, tortures, massacres, threats to leaders and their collaborators, recruitment of children and young people, sexual violence against women, and acts of violence when the government did nothing. In our case, the women belonging to the Embera Chami group, who live in the west of the country from Panama to Ecuador, suffered the rigors of war ourselves, and we often had to leave our land to beg in cities because we were scared of the armed conflict and because our children and family were literally dying of hunger in indigenous territories. As a strategy to prevent displacement and the abandonment of our ancestral land, we have implemented programs for traditional handcrafts to reaffirm our traditions and generate revenues to feed our children and cover our basic needs. Unfortunately, in Colombia, this craft work is not valued, and without the support of micro credits to allow us to compete in global markets, it's difficult for us to sell our products. The Embera Chami women in Colombia, the highest number of indigenous women displaced from our country, who are suffering the consequences of a war in which we did not participate, we have come to the permanent forum so that we can get fair trade for our products and for organizations that will support quality control and the marketing of our handiwork so that we can continue to weave our own future. We would like to thank the Permanent Forum for their very valuable report, which clearly revealed the difficult situation that the 102 ethnic groups that live in Colombia are suffering. We would also like to request the Permanent Forum to ask our government to comply with the recommendations made during the recent mission to protect the life of indigenous people and respect their rights as enshrined in the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, especially for women and children. Thank you.
I give the floor now to Wilton Littlechild from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many of us will remember the remarks of UN Secretary General His Excellency Ban Ki-moon during his opening remarks for the forum's ninth session. In his remarks, Mr. Ban Ki-moon drew special attention to the burden of tuberculosis among indigenous peoples when he stated, and I quote, "In some countries, an indigenous person is 600 times more likely to contract tuberculosis than the general population," end of quote. During this year's opening remarks last Monday, the Secretary General again highlighted the higher rates of diseases like diabetes and tuberculosis suffered by indigenous peoples. Honorable Chairperson, this is the fourth year that this forum will hear from participants on the call for action to address the global burden of tuberculosis among indigenous peoples and their communities. With the momentum gathered at the forum's previous sessions, and given that the World Health Organization chaired the UN Interagency Support Group for the UN Permanent Forum this year, we were particularly hopeful that the WHO would build on the call for action to address the excessive burden of diseases like tuberculosis and HIV that indigenous peoples suffer globally. During our recent hearings at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada, we have been witnessing the current and direct link of tuberculosis and the Indian residential schools legacy. Many Indian residential schools were also sanitariums for tuberculosis, which remains a health risk for survivors and their descendants today. We are gravely concerned at the lack of presence of any WHO staff person from the central office. And although we would like to acknowledge the presence of the Pan American Health Organization, we would like to remind delegates that this organization represents only the Latin American region. Furthermore, at the IASG meeting hosted by the WHO in Geneva last September, UNAIDS did not attend and didn't send regrets either. Madam Chair, for the last 3 years, this forum has heard interventions calling for actions and solutions, including the development of a focal point person within the Stop TB partnership who could begin to lead this urgent initiative. Madam Chair, we recommend the following actions and solutions. One, that the Stop TB partnership establishes in its secretariat a function that focuses on Indigenous peoples to begin the essential work of engaging Indigenous communities and national TB programs. Two, that regions at next year's permanent forum session report on their disaggregated TB rates, highlighting countries where Indigenous peoples' access to health care is adequate in identifying nations who require changes in their health care systems to ensure that all Indigenous peoples enjoy the right to be free of TB and the right to health. And lastly, that the WHO, UNAIDS, and the Stop TB Partnership recognize the enormous role that they have to play in leading and supporting initiatives that address tuberculosis and HIV affecting Indigenous peoples, and that this recognition be demonstrated through these agencies' in-person participation at the Permanent Forum annual meetings. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your statement. I give the floor now to Tomás Alarcón Eizaguirre, Comisión Jurídica para el Autodesarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas Originarios Andinos, CAPAR. I give the floor to Mr. José Jacques Wicks, Coordinator of Youth Parliament in Guatemala.
Señora Presidenta.
Madam Chairperson, please allow me to congratulate you on the organization of this comprehensive dialogue with UNICEF and say how important it is to see what work is being done on behalf of children and young people and this active work to provide a better future. I'm pleased to see that this is bearing fruit. I would like to congratulate the independent experts, especially the independent expert of Guatemala, Alvaro Pop, for his tireless work to provide fora for better development. I'm pleased to see that UNICEF is working with developing countries, especially those of us working on public policies in favor of children and young people, getting countries to grant priority to investment in early childhood. As coordinator of the Guatemalan Parliament for Children and Young People, I would like to make the following recommendations to the Permanent Forum. One, all those countries that have ratified the Convention on the Rights of the Child have a debt with children. We have to create mechanisms that will allow Indigenous peoples to participate in sustainable protection systems, ones which combine formal systems and real systems to guarantee the cosmovision in favor of Indigenous peoples, especially children. Two, ensure that states grant priority to the interests of children, especially in international adoptions of indigenous children to comply with domestic legislation and the principle of family units. We must take into account cultural backgrounds. 3, design joint mechanisms to guarantee the interest of children and work on the prevention of HIV and provision of medicine. For human rights, we must include the principles of the Convention of the Rights of the Child and the cosmovision of our peoples. 4, strengthen communication channels for intercultural approaches regarding citizenship and how children have their rights. 5, encourage the involvement of indigenous experts. And indigenous experts need to participate in local and regional processes, such as international conferences on HIV/AIDS and the different evaluations, and also on any committees linked to the Convention on the Rights of the Child, so that the rights of indigenous peoples are taken into account at this level. Thank you very much to the Permanent Forum, and I would encourage you and your chairperson to continue your good work.
I invite Mr. Morgan and other UNICEF representatives to respond to the comments and questions that have been raised.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairperson. This will be the final. Yeah. Okay. If I could start by thanking you personally for the hosting of this dialogue, for the excellent chairing of the session. Can I thank the UNICEF team, all of you? Most of you have had a chance to speak, and I will ask one of our key team members also to compliment my concluding remarks. But thank you to all the colleagues, Rina and our colleagues around the room. Can I thank all of you for your statements, for your questions? As I said before, this is extremely helpful to us to guide us as we move forward in a more proactive way, as we develop our policy framework, as we take forward our work on the rights of indigenous children around the world. It's been enormously helpful, and can I thank you in particular personally for the great positive spirit that we've had this morning. It's been very encouraging for us. We have listened, we have taken notes, and note, if you see what I mean. We've taken good note of many of your recommendations and of the information you've provided us. Some of this we will feed back to our relevant country offices, where we have country programs of cooperation in individual countries. Some of the information and suggestions you've provided us, we will feed back to our national committees. There were a number of countries where we have national committees where statements and recommendations were made, including Canada, Australia, the United States of America, and so on. So we will make sure that our colleagues in our associate committees are aware and informed of the concerns and the points you've made. I think we've come from this dialogue with a good sense that we need to be better informed ourselves in UNICEF and more broadly. We've had a number of responses and statements relating to various issues on health, mental health, physical health, children's well-being, issues of disability, and we have begun to take steps with our technical colleagues in this regard. I think it has also come out very clearly that we need to have an intersectoral and holistic approach to the rights of indigenous children, going from physical survival, nutrition, and well-being to social, emotional, cognitive, and spiritual aspects of their development and of the rights of all children. So I would personally conclude by emphasizing our intent as part of our equity focus to be proactive, to increase UNICEF's contribution through the totality of our work in collaboration with partner organizations on the rights of Indigenous children. And that will be our commitment going forward. With your permission, Madam Chair, I would like to ask our colleague Miguel Hilario from our regional office based in Panama to make a few concluding remarks on behalf of UNICEF. Thank you.
Señora Presidente.
Distinguished Chairperson and members of the Permanent Forum, I would like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to be here to share information about UNICEF's work in Latin America, Africa, and throughout the world. As we heard at the beginning of this event from Mr. Alvaro Pop, we heard statistics that really showed how alarming this situation is for Indigenous peoples in Latin America. The World Bank has done 10-year-long research in 1997 and then 2007, and saw that despite the fact that Latin American countries are growing in terms that their GDP is growing, but Indigenous peoples have not seen any positive impact from this. If you measure GNI, we can see that Indigenous peoples are still lagging far behind. Extreme poverty affects Indigenous peoples and people of African descent. That is why it is so important to take the words of Mr. Richard Morgan seriously. Information is important and guidelines are important for UNICEF to be able to implement and execute the recommendations of this forum. It is also important to realize that an event such as this, when we talk about poverty and Indigenous people, is a long-term work. It is rather like asking ants to carry the load of an elephant. In order for Indigenous girls and boys to have the same educational opportunities as other children, also the same access to drinking water as children in cities. This afternoon, our colleagues and friends have talked about their experiences, and I think we have all seen that there is still a lot to be done, not just in Latin America, but also in Asia and in Africa. Someone here today did say that at least we are doing something. As our colleague from Bolivia told us, that bilingual intercultural education is important for the survival of cultures and languages. We have seen many examples of the work of UNICEF in the region to contribute to the self-determination of Indigenous peoples. I would like to mention the fact that we are very open to the Permanent Forum's recommendations and ideas. One classic example of that is the research on teen suicides in indigenous peoples in Peru, Brazil, and Colombia. We are currently publishing that research and hope to be able to talk to governments and agencies to do something about that, not just to study the phenomenon, but to prevent it. I would also like to stress that, as our director, Mr. Richard Morgan, said, we are very grateful for your suggestions and for the guidelines that you have given us, and we will continue to receive them both formally and informally so that we can work to eradicate poverty in Latin America, especially among indigenous peoples. And to conclude, I would like to say that it is not just UNICEF's work to eliminate discrimination and poverty. It is also the work of governments and NGOs to do the same. On behalf of UNICEF, I would like to thank you once again and would ask you to work together like ants to eradicate poverty in the world.
Chien Tingui from the Global Indigenous Youth Caucus that wants to make a final statement to UNICEF.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Global Indigenous Youth Caucus appreciates the chance to communicate with the United Nations Children's Fund directly in this session. We strongly urge the fund, in cooperation with relevant UN agencies and the Global Indigenous Youth Caucus, to take the following recommendations into serious consideration and translate the written words into action. First, according to the forum's recommendation made in paragraph 31A of its first session, a report on the policies, guidelines, and programs of UN agencies was requested to be prepared with regard to the ways in which they address the specific needs of indigenous children. We request the fund to prepare such a report with an extension on how the UN agencies are implementing the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples with regard to indigenous youth and children. Second, we again urge the fund, as recommended by the forum in paragraph 14 of its second session and reiterated in paragraph 63 of its fifth session, to appoint indigenous youth as goodwill ambassadors to raise public awareness. These indigenous youth should have the appropriate knowledge and experience as to the specific needs of indigenous youth and children. Third, the forum has recognized in paragraph 9 of its second session the need for a new indicators that specifically target problems particularly faced by indigenous children and youth. We urge the fund, with the participation of indigenous youth and children, to develop such indicators and share them with other entities of the UN system. Fourth, we understand that issues relevant to indigenous youth and children are addressed in a cross-cutting manner in the fund. Accordingly, we strongly recommend the fund to appoint an indigenous rights specialist with indigenous origin to coordinate the fund's projects, policies, programs, and actions relevant to indigenous youth and children in order to have a comprehensive monitoring and overview mechanism. Fifth, we strongly recommend the fund to allocate at least one interim position to indigenous youth every year to empower indigenous youth and provide knowledge and experience on the UN system and the work of the fund. We also urge other UN agencies to set up such position within their own relevant departments to empower indigenous youth with practical knowledge, experience, and skill. Sixth, we strongly urge the fund to ensure that when conducting reports, studies, and planning projects and programs on indigenous youth and children, the participation of indigenous children and youth in every process is guaranteed with their free, prior, and informed consent. Also, expert advice on indigenous social cultural backgrounds should be called upon. 7. The report E/C 2019/2011/7, prepared by the fund, talks mainly about the positive work of the fund in the developing countries. However, it should be noted that indigenous children and youth in so-called industrialized North still live in disadvantaged conditions, facing all the same problems as indigenous peoples of the South. Having this in mind, we urge the fund to pay attention to the indigenous children and youth in every region. 8. To build the capacity of indigenous youth advocates to effectively respond to current and emerging human rights challenges, we request the fund and other relevant UN agencies to cooperate closely with Global Indigenous Youth Caucus to conduct regional and international youth training programs. 9. We strongly recommend and request the fund to coordinate their activities and operations with the UN Program on Youth, the Secretariat of the Forum, and the Global Indigenous Caucus to ensure the participation of indigenous youth in the upcoming UN High-Level Meeting on Youth. 10th, while climate change and environmental degradation is imposing tremendous impacts on indigenous youth and children, our voices are not reflected in UN decision-making process and policies. We therefore strongly recommend and request the fund to coordinate with other UN agencies and monitoring bodies working on environmental issues, including but not limited to UNEP, UNFCCC, and CBD, to mainstream indigenous children and youth's role in the system. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your comment. Now I give the floor to Mr. Alvaro Pop to make some final comments.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Ladies and gentlemen, representatives, by your leave, I would like to say thank you for the way everyone has participated in this comprehensive dialogue with UN agencies and funds. The challenge of children in the world, especially indigenous children, I think is clear. We recognize common denominators in both the tragedy and aspirations for a better world for all children. We stress the need to be aware of the specific rights of indigenous peoples throughout their lives, but especially children and young people. We are convinced that this exchange will be truly important in the way we plan for the future, especially for the agency, for UNICEF. The questions raised here are more than an evaluation. They have to become guidelines. Thank you once again.
Thank you, Alvaro. The time is now approaching to 1 p.m. Therefore, I intend to adjourn this meeting. But before, I would like to thank UNICEF, Mr. Morgan, the UNICEF representatives that have been here today in this dialogue. And I also want to thank the participants for their comments and questions. This practice of the UN, the permanent forum, really enrich the possibilities not only to talk about the implementation of the declaration, but defining how we are going to do it together based on best practices, experience, and good lessons that we are learning in our work at regional, at global, and at country levels. So I really thank all of you. This afternoon at 3 p.m., the forum will consider agenda item 8, future work of the permanent forum, including issues of the Economic and Social Council and emerging issues. The meeting will take place in this conference room. Before we adjourn, I will ask Chandra Roy from the Secretariat to give us information on the side events.
Good afternoon. There's only, you have a very short list of only three side events to choose from. One is going to be addressing the threat of non-communicable diseases, which will take place here in this conference room. There's one on Mexican electoral bodies, which will be in conference room 6, organized by the Permanent Mission of Mexico. And there's Desarrollo con Identidad, which is about the Pueblo Guarani y Aymara, which is going to be on the 12th floor of the UN Building 2, UN Plaza 2 building, 12th floor. Thank you.
Till 3 p.m. this afternoon, this meeting is adjourned.